Hello there. I would like to begin the episode by thanking James Siebel, Ides of April, Michael Kreischer, Kadeem Mbeyi, and Alexander McConnell. All of these are people who have gone to patreon.com/duckvtv and helped support this network and this show. You can be like them and get cool stuff too. Also, if you want to, you can go to orb.show and listen to the newest Duckfeed show about the Venture Brothers, a very good cartoon.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Marathon 2 Durandal, which is a first-person shooter developed and published by Bungie for the Macintosh in 1995.
Yeah, big shout-out to Max.
Yeah.
Who executive produced this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Max. Also, a big shout out to all of our Patreon backers, because this is a premium episode. Everybody will get the generalities here, get the first portion of the episode, and the backers get to hear the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Blessed are you. Yeah, so this is this is our second Bungie game, and I want to float an idea by you.
Let's do. Yeah.
Is there a company that's maybe worse at naming aliens? Because I can't think of one, and I'm being sincere.
Right. Yeah. So are you talking about like their self-given names, the clusters of syllables? Are you talking about like the generic enemy names, like the troopers and whatnot?
Both.
Okay. Okay.
Like the Pathor, the Falica.
Yeah. The Falicta, the Safit. Yeah.
The Safit. Like, why would you ever put those letters together?
I think maybe they're trying to approach like a Lovecraft kind of thing. Like, these are unnatural syllables for our tongue, so we're finding an approximation for them. However, with the contractions and stuff like that, these are not very memorable names, and it's very hard to...
If you love apostrophes, yes, you will love this game.
If you love apostrophes and the Dragon Riders of Pern is no longer doing it for you, if you've built up a tolerance, the Marathon series may be for you.
Yeah, because there will be... And there's no voice acting in this.
Right.
Which means that... I found it incredibly hard to grab on to a lot of this stuff.
That's where it becomes a problem. And I think that, you know, we're hitting this right now, and this could be a final summation, but it's really important because this game's legacy is the plot. Like, this is the story heavy 90s first person shooter, right? At least pre Half-Life, right? Where the rubber hits the road on this and stop, you know, like where the names stop being goofy and start actually being a hindrance and start being like a, you know, an obstacle towards talking about this is you can't remember like who is who and what is what, like in the story. Like, eventually, like, you get it. Okay, before bad guys, the Safit, we never really see them, but we're, like, walking around in their spaces and stuff. Okay, like, you understand that. Anything more granular than that, like the individual names of the tribes, that is grist for a particular kind of wiki mill, and really yes. Hardcore fans who kind of, you know, grew up in this you know, not grew up, yeah. but you know what I mean? Like, they just like, well, they were around and followed us from beginning to, yeah.
While you're playing, you know. Doom, you know, is maybe the idea. And it just, I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. I was really hoping to connect with this stronger than yes. I did. And I just didn't. Like, we're going to talk about all that, you know, at length and everything, mm-hmm. but I felt like a special shout out to just how horrible and unsticky these names are.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a certain kind of like, panache in coming up with a sticky, catchy phoneme,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like a catchy sound.
Yes.
Romulan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, Romulan, you know? that has a base yeah. in, you know, Romulus. Well, yeah.
That Rome. Seems like a good start, right?
Yeah.
Like
starting a thing that has a connotation already. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's not like this game doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, with its other things.
Klingon.
Yeah. Klingon. Like the, and also one of them is kind of like Flicka.
Uh-huh. Which is my and friend. It's yeah, worse. It's my friend. Weird.
I keep learning about Flicka and I don't like it. I'm not happy about it. I don't feel mm-hmm. good about it. I'm struggling with it. Yeah. So it's, you know, I also, the reason why I wanted to load up with that light softball of a criticism is because mm-hmm. I have a lot of problems with this game.
Yeah.
And it's really well loved, and I wanted to get that out there out on Front Street to Max and then to other people who really love this game.
Yeah.
That I did not like it very much. I would never take away your childhood memories.
No. A lot of my problems ultimately come down to like the ways in which this is ambitious for the 90s make it intolerable to me today. And by intolerable, sure. yeah. like just the aimlessness of the experience of going around these levels and knowing I have to beat this level, but not knowing if I am having any effect on the universe, actually filled yeah. me with a huge amount of anxiety and dread.
And not in an intentional way. There's a huge disconnect between these levels.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that when we get there, but there is something fundamental. Like there's a fundamental disagreement that I think Marathon 2 has with itself, in terms of its kind of medium, like its genre of being mm-hmm. a 90s FPS where like, yes, you're in mazes. You know, and they're disconnected, like, and trying to have this running story and narrative
mm-hmm.
that ends up making it feel incredibly jarring
yeah.
to me. Like everything feels disconnected to me in this, from a gameplay perspective and a narrative perspective. And it was difficult.
Yeah.
Difficult to sit down and want to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you play as an unnamed security guy, who is a pawn, like, kind of running errands for an AI that has gone rampant named Durandal.
Right. You are working for them, pretty much just pressed into service, striking back at this aggressive alien race called the Four, mm-hmm. who destroyed the human space station Marathon over the planet of Tau Ceti in the first game. Though this is called Marathon, nothing actually takes place on the starship Marathon or space station, yeah. you know, Marathon. So that's the first big problem that I have. I am the angriest video game nerd. No, I just, it's...
What's the deal? I love how the four is spelled, because it's how many different ways can you spell four, but all in one word. Like you could get rid of so many letters and yeah. still have the same sound.
P-F-H-O-R is how yeah. that is rendered in our alphabet.
Three consonants.
Yes.
So this is a 2.5D shooter
mm-hmm.
With 2D enemies and weapon sprites, you know, similar to your Dooms, and with a 3D rendered world with texture and light mapping.
It's impressive, you know, for 1995.
It is impressive for 1995.
1994, even, like when the first game was released. Like they were still, you know, again, this basically the same engine as the first one. Texture mapping and light mapping, you know, would not be seen really for a little bit yes. on, you know, the FPSs that you and I grew up as early Windows kids.
Yeah. And this game specifically was released for Windows. As the Macintosh, for PC as well.
Was it released on PC? Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So that's one of the reasons why I imagine Max suggested this one, and this is the most mm-hmm. popular entry in the series, even though the third one is more beloved, is because this was the first one released both for Mac and
okay.
PC.
Gotcha.
So the pace of play is very different than your mid-90s shooters like Doom or Quake or Heretic or Blood. It's a little bit more methodical and slow, a little bit more exploratory. And it's not, you know, the first one had a lot of platforming puzzles, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. This one has a lot of, it's like hard to call them puzzles, non-combat tasks that combat stands in the way of.
Yeah.
They kind of change up the pace. It's not just this like pulse pounding, you know, mm-hmm. Doom-esque experience.
Yeah, it's like intra-level little tasks that you have to do that result mm-hmm. in like platforms open, platforms rising, or a door opening up somewhere to get you where you need to go.
Which to me intersects really poorly with the level design and map, but we'll talk about that.
Yes.
And that's definitely a sign of the times. That's, you know, your mileage may vary mm-hmm. On that.
Yeah. As somebody who played Halo first, the pacing here definitely did feel a little bit familiar, especially the number of enemies that you were fighting at once. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically in Marathon 2, you have these large open arenas, these big open spaces that you are going around. Yeah, and you're also dealing with a lot of attacks that are projectiles here. Even the weapons that are hit scan, like your pistol, they're projectiles. They just move very, very fast.
Yes. Yeah. When you come upon enemies, they're either already engaged in some kind of set piece firefight, sometimes with mobs, sometimes with each other, mm-hmm. Or they just teleport in around you.
Yes. The like latter is very common. Like,
yeah. There's guys. There's a guy's alarm. Guys. Hey guys. Hey guys. Hey guys. Hey guys. Hey guys. You have to turn off the Turkington sound generator. And then like eventually, you know, there aren't guys teleporting around you. And there are this entry in the series gets criticism for having a low amount of enemy variety, but there are kind of different palette swaps to show different difficulties.
Yeah. So like just to bring one up, like the Felicta that we had spoken about, they're like gaping Yetis, almost gaping sewer Yetis.
Mm-hmm. Gugs.
Gugs. Yeah, there we go. That's a good. Yeah, thank you.
Gugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like their original green variety might throw shit. Mm-hmm. Their like later red varieties will throw poison balls and stuff like that. Yes. Or will throw like fireballs and stuff like that.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Your arsenal in this game is very limited. And you end up cycling between kind of all of your weapons. Mm-hmm. You know, there's what it's probably one of those pithy things someone says where like an FPS is as good as its arsenal.
Yeah.
I do not like this arsenal. There's a really important part of this. You cannot reload.
Yes.
Manually. It's not Doom where there isn't reloading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there is reloading. You just can't choose to do it.
Right.
You have to end, which will lead to absurd situations in which you were just firing a gun
mm-hmm.
To empty it out to go into an encounter with a full clip.
Yes. And ammo is relatively limited. You end up running out of stuff, especially if you're playing on like the regular difficulty levels. You're fighting mm-hmm. a lot of dudes.
Yeah, it is just full of flickas. You're just killing horses. The arsenal is the same as Marathon 1, except with the addition of a shotgun. Mm-hmm. It is a good shotgun.
Good shotgun.
For what that's worth. Real Love good shotgun. You know, ammo was always in short supply because it was my favorite weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Flechetti SMG was also pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But I had a hard time connecting with the weapons of this as well. I don't think that they have, like, other than the shotgun, do not have like really good satisfying kinesthetics to me.
Yeah. I liked the plasma pistol. That was real mm-hmm. cool. Especially
that's a Halo guy.
Charge
it up. If you're raised by Halo, you mm-hmm. love a plasma pistol that charges up.
Yeah. But it was good. It's a real satisfying. It has the projectile moves at like a medium speed, and it's fun to lead the shot. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. I also liked the alien fire blaster. I couldn't find the actual name of it. It's literally just a single use. It cannot be reloaded. There's no ammo for it. When you pick it up, your HUD cannot interpret its display. So it's a bunch of like gibberish.
Yeah. It's got a very funny alt fire, which is one of the most useless things I can think of.
Yeah.
You dual wield. In this, again, a Bungie kind of trope, mm-hmm. your fist, which you start off with, the pistol, and then the shotguns.
Right.
Which is all fine. Mm-hmm. It's very satisfying to get the rhythm of dual wielding
mm-hmm.
In this because it's the secondary fire.
Right.
For this. So you're bouncing back and forth between right and left mouse clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Which feels really fun.
Or even just making it, you know, making a choice whether you want to throw out a bunch of lead in a small amount of time, or if you want to just fire, you know, all of your right and then fire left while your right is reloading.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can, gives you can a either have continuous fire or kind of cover your own reloads, mm-hmm. which wouldn't be a thing without the artificial constraint of not being able to manually reload.
Right.
But is still a strategic concern that is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about these levels, Gary. They are extremely big. In fact, mm-hmm. I would say like they feel bigger than they need to be, and they feel bigger than like we would ultimately settle on for like what first person shooter levels ought to be, like outside of like Route Canal, where you're in a in Half-Life 2 where you're in a like a vehicle going across the stuff. Like these are big, these are intricate. It's a lot of empty space, and this is kind of pre-immersive sim. There are some nods towards like, hey, some of these rooms have an implied function, but it's very like geographic boxy spaces, right?
I mean, the thing is it's pre-immersive sim to a degree.
Yeah.
Right? Like I don't want to let it off the hook too much, because like we did have like, you know, when did Duke Nukem 3D come out?
1997.
96. So 96, actually, like early 96. Yeah. So just a little bit after this. And that has spaces that make sense. Mm-hmm. This is it's like the worst of both worlds, where it's like, you know, so Doom levels, the idea behind a Doom level is that it just suggests a space station. Like, it's not like you go through the lounge, you go through the sleeping quarters or whatever. It's just this texture on this wall makes you think space station.
Yeah.
That's basically what happens here. But as kind of an answer to the first one, the criticism that the first one, you spent a lot of time in hallways. Mm-hmm. This one, everything is almost everything is incredibly wide open.
Yeah.
And for individual combat encounters, great. For knowing where to fuck to go, horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really, really... like kind of like some of the colors are kind of nice. Like there's some kind of atmospheric washes that will come over certain levels, and they we'll talk about the music, which kind of add to atmosphere, but it is very hard to know where my place is in this world and where I need to go.
Yeah. There,
like just aren't landmarks.
It ended up coming down. Yeah. So a lack of landmarks is definitely like one thing. Like that, like this game needed like a landscape designer almost.
Yes.
Like just somebody from a discipline, landscape designer, or like somebody who works in theme parks, who, you know, somebody whose actual discipline is to bring form to large spaces so it is memorable and you know which, you know, like how you're supposed
draw
to flow
my
through
eyes
it.
Somewhere.
Yes.
Like my eyes are just like loose dogs, like two wild dogs pointing in two different directions.
Moving
my eyes haven't
led
anywhere.
Moving independently, yeah. Like the sniper from Snake Eater.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, this is the end, my friend. I could not, my eye was not drawn anywhere. I just bounced, my like vision just bounces off of these levels.
So I like what this led to was me playing, looking at the map quite often. And we can talk about mm-hmm. the map and the ways that it doesn't really rise to the occasion. Or just like heading in a direction. If I saw corpses, that meant, okay, I've already been here. I was looking for enemy spawns, and eventually you run out of enemy spawns.
Yeah. Because some levels, you know, your direction for this level, for what you're supposed to do in the levels also interfaces with this, where sometimes mm-hmm. Durandal will be like, kill all the dudes. Sometimes he'll say, go activate a panel, and he'll show you on the map where it is, but the map doesn't account for verticality.
Yeah.
Which is not uncommon.
Right. I mean, this was a problem as late as like Fallout New Vegas, right?
Yes. Yeah. This is a huge thing. And the way that the maps are made for this is really interesting, where they can't do verticality. Everything overlaps on itself.
Yeah.
So depending on where you load into an area, it will load a different version of the area.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually occupy the same space. So the map couldn't have a Metroid Prime map in this. But to me, the answer then is like, don't do quite so much verticality, because the amount of times I would, you know, go to find the terminal again, which was a pain, where Durandal like gave me the map, look and see where I need to go, and then try to go there and just find a dead end because I'm on the wrong z-axis, was incredibly common.
Yeah.
And trying to find the way around, like looking at the map and trying to find the way around, and I'm just gonna forward this because I think it fucking sucks, falling into water. And water was the other big innovation in this thing, and there's so much fucking water in this, and you can't do very much in water. Like right. most of your weapons don't work. You're not shooting. You're just kind of going slowly looking for a way to get out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is like big trapped in a pool Sims energy for like a lot of this game. Like I hate the water segment so fucking much. Mm-hmm. And it feels like for at least for the first third of the game.
Yeah.
There is so much water. Like it eventually, you know, you get on the ship, it kind of chills a little bit.
Yeah, but it becomes lava and goo, which are more just direct hazards.
Yeah, more like at least it's something. It's not just you fall in and then your punishment is to go try to find the ladder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know? God help you. You wish there was a ladder.
Yeah, you go find like the one little like hallway that has a set of steps or the button you can press to make steps appear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who designed this fucking place, man? Yeah.
Or hope that you bob upward with enough velocity in order to clear the lip.
Yeah, which is difficult because there's no jump.
Right.
Instead, you have no gravity. Like, it's this weird coyote time
mm-hmm.
thing.
I just pictured my guy running around with a big, like, glider hanging off, like, mm-hmm. off of his back. You run off of ledges and keep moving forward, kind of gliding to the place where you hope to land. It took me a very long time to figure out that this is what the game wanted me to do, like to get between spaces, because it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense as a thing that you can or should be able to do. It feels like an exploit.
It's like how Mario can jump over one Mario with or run over one Mario with right. things, except you can do it for like three or four.
Yes.
Marathon guy widths.
There are levels that depend on you doing this and understanding how to read the levels to do this.
What's kind of frustrating is there's a cheat code that you can use to enable a jump. So it's in engine. I didn't do it because I was like, this is going to spoil this and I want to be able to complain. But just because I think it's dumb that there's not a jump.
Uh-huh.
But you can, it is capable. You can make a jump happen.
Mm-hmm.
Through a cheat, at least through the Aleph version, like the modern version that I played.
Yes. What was the first person game with a jump? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the first big one was Quake. It's hard to tell. I don't think that there was one in Duke Nukem.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot to kind of do this. You can rocket jump and grenade launcher jump with this as well, but that chews through your armor, like your shield. Another thing that like Bungie just thinks is the coolest fucking thing in the world for some reason
is multiple jump
levels of charge shields. Rocket jumping. Rocket jumping is cool.
The multiple levels of shields.
Multiple levels of shield.
Sorry, like, I was hung up on how cool rocket jumping is.
Oh, rocket jumping is great. I would love to die that way someday. But like,
yeah, what happened to Butterfield? Like, just you got on the range, you didn't come back. Yeah, you should have seen how much hang time he got, or what was left of him.
He saw some ammo.
His last words were, "Maybe I can get up there."
Yeah, exactly. I got to see what's up there. His last words were function 5. But it didn't make any sense. So
it's one of those things that sounds profound to some of the people who don't understand, like saying you're going to go to the land of wind and ghosts.
Exactly. So this is, and even doing those rocket jumps to get around ended up being kind of a pain. To me, like not fun to time and not as snappy and fun as like Team Fortress, which I know came later, but that has a very snappy rocket jump.
Yes. Here, it definitely feels like an exploit, like something that they saw, but they just didn't patch out, which I think the original rocket jumping was anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have health, as we mentioned, which is with shields or three levels to it. And then you also have an oxygen meter.
Yes.
That will drain when you're underwater. And it has to be refilled. There are oxygen refill stations throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of there are pickups for ammo. But most of your health and oxygen refills are going to be done at terminals.
Right.
These specific panels you can do, including saving.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a core mechanic of the game. Like this is very intentional to its experience. It's not something I like very much, but I understand that this is not an accident. It's not like, oh, I hope somebody got fired for this. Like this is definitely part of the design. It's just not something that spoke to me very much.
It is a decision, and it feels like it is a decision that comes out of like a baseline level of hostility. So in order to activate save anywhere, at least in the Aleph 1 version, which is what we played, you have to use a cheat. I didn't realize this. Play through the entire game just using the terminals. Ultimately, it's fine, although there is a one particular thing. I guess I'll just say it. It doesn't save when you go to a new mission. So if you if the last time you saved was halfway through the previous mission, and when you get to the new mission, you drop into the middle of a firefight, which happens very often.
Very frequently.
You may die and then get sent halfway through the previous mission.
And the idea, in the beginning of levels as well, there's not often a save point,
right?
Like you have to find it, and keep in mind, like, put the asterisk next to what we were talking about with the kind of hard to read level design that are very big and sprawling.
Yeah.
You can see what they're going for is almost like a bonfire vibe, right?
Yes.
But bonfires are placed. So this doesn't work for a couple reasons. One, because when you enter a new area, in a game with a bonfire kind of system, and for just on the off chance, somebody he's listening to this and know what we're talking about. That's how Dark Souls does its progress saving. They put a bonfire at the beginning of an area.
Yeah.
Universally. That doesn't happen here. Also, you'd think, okay, so after you have beat the level, before you exit the level, go and save with your progress and stuff. It's hard to find your way back to a save point in this game. Because, again, because of the uselessness of the map and the difficulty with landmarks and reading this environment. So I would do that sometimes, like if I didn't have a lot of health and I was like, fuck, I don't want to just get killed, you know, by a teleport ambush as soon as I go into this level. I'm going to go backtrack and find a save point. Sometimes I wouldn't do it because it would just be a huge pain in the ass to do. So I would have that experience you're talking about where you get in the new level, you get ambushed, you get killed, you get sent halfway back through the last level. And it's not like I have a great sense of these levels even after beating them. So sometimes I would just be like, I would take a wrong turn or something and get lost trying to reaccomplish the thing I just fucking did. And it's maddening. It is like a really, really frustrating problem.
So I want to get back to the point that I had where like the same, like that experience is one that definitely came up in testing, right? Deciding not to fix it feels like it does come from a certain amount of like either hostility or get goodness. I was worried that I was not going to be able to finish this game in time to record for the show. I didn't finish this until yesterday.
Same.
When I made the notes. Normally, I like to have a little bit more breathing time than that. I didn't want to cheat, but if it was a choice between finishing with cheats and being able to at least talk a little bit about what happened or not finishing, then I was going to finish it. We often say about PC games that the difficulty is whatever you want it to be because of the presence of console commands. When you go searching for any kind of console command or cheat for a marathon, you get the lead designer, Jason Jones, not the comedian, the Halo guy, talking about how, you know, we don't want to deny you of the actual experience. You need to rise to the occasion, you know, in order to beat this, which is a philosophy that I do not care for
at all. Yeah, not something I respect.
Yeah.
There are a couple of ways to cheat. The cheats are pretty limp. You can get save anywhere, which is actually very useful. And then there is a way to refill health or get temporary invincibility, which I did the save anywhere cheat once I found it, which is probably about halfway through the game. Like I had one or two of those get ambushed at the beginning of a level and restart things. And I was like, fuck this. I'm going to save at the end of a level. Not the beginning of the next level, which would make sense because they love to just throw you into fucking the fire, but like save at the end of every level before I move on to the next one. And then a couple times I used the invincibility to get through some lava shit that I didn't feel like dealing with.
Yes.
But for the most part, I was pretty sparing with the cheat codes.
Yeah. So I think that's a little bit where the ethos of the save points, comes from. Ultimately there are lots of them. And there there is like an official like map site where you can see again the flat and 2D versions of the maps, but it does call out like, hey, a save point is like roughly over here. So you know, if you're panicking, you can go over and get that. I don't mind that, you know, health and O2 are given out by panels. That's just Half-Life stuff. It's fine.
Yeah. And probably influenced Half-Life.
Yeah.
You know, specifically. The kind of goals that you have in these levels are worth talking about. You accomplish, you know, you have various goals. There are different kinds of missions. They're not called this, but there are missions where you have to kill every enemy. There are missions where you just have to go flip a switch and come back. There are missions where you just have to go to a certain terminal and that's the end of the level. I don't find this super well signaled.
No.
as to what you're going to do. So pretty early on, I think it's like the sixth level, there's a kill everyone mission that also made me throw my hair out because, mm-hmm. again, these levels, like, we're talking about this stuff now because in the level, there's only so many ways I can say, like, I was lost. I walked around until I found, like, the hallway that led to the enemies I hadn't fought yet.
I walked around getting more and more anxious because I felt like I was going to be trapped here forever and I can't walk away from it because this is my job.
Yeah. It's like if I get lost in the game, I get lost in real life. You know,
what happened to Cole? Oh, he got mazed. Mazed? Yeah. Marathon. Yeah, he's Cole, in there now. Cole
got mazed and Gary got rocket jumped. You know, the way you pay tribute to a gamer is by gaming. So buckle up. it was just very, very frustrating to spend all that time. And the signaling as to what you're supposed to do is told kind of like impeccably and with a flavor I like. Because, you know, for people who are just like pulling their hair out right now, being like, talk about the plot. The plot's the good part. Like, we will. Give us a second. But knowing what you have to do to get to those plot bits is frustrating to me.
So it was like, it was a thing where like, I liked the combat. I liked the writing when I got to terminals that gave me like flavor stuff about the AIs and things. It was the getting around in between stuff that actually made me want to pull my hair out.
And the combat lost its charm for me at some point.
Cause they don't, like, there's only so much it can do.
Yeah. It just runs out of stuff. So like it ended up being, you know, the pillars of like exploration levels being like bottoming it out. This is one of my least favorite games for that. Pretty good plot that I wish was told a little bit differently and wasn't so nouny.
Yeah.
And then combat that was fine.
Right.
You know, just fine for the era. So it ended up averaging out not super good. Right. But we should talk about the plot because that's why people remember this game.
That's what puts the butts in the seats, man. And, you know, this does have an intricate plot. There is a lot going on here, even by the standards of just like the average video game of what was, you know, released around that time. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And also, I mean, the usual disclaimer that we do, there are people who have become PhDs in this, not literally, but people put a lot of time into it. We're going to use certain words and names inelegantly.
The Fa'id.
Yeah. Right.
So people have joined the race of the Fa'id.
Given that we've only played one of three available games and not really gone on too much of a wiki dive, but, you know, just kind of have become, you know, fluent if not conversant, or conversant if not fluent, whichever one is the lesser of those in this, please be kind to us and do not hold it against us if we call something the wrong name or whatever. But this is you know, this is really intricate. There's a lot going on here, and I can see why somebody who found this at the time, when very little else was giving you something like this, I can see why this would be up there in your pantheon for it.
Absolutely. Like, especially if you had come to, you know, Doom or whatever, and we're looking for the thinking man's Doom, kind of a thing. Like,
it's not a dumb thing to ask for.
It's not a dumb thing to ask for. It's something, it's, you know, wanting a more complicated plot with your shoots is fine.
Yeah.
You know, and what's here, I do think is generally pretty good. I read about the other games in the series. There's some of it that is not as cool as I get the sense that the creators think is. Especially things that Bungie would go on to reuse over and over again.
Bungie,
there's certain things they really love.
The people who put together the world bibles for this, they have certain fixations that do not resonate with me, kind of like the way the names do not resonate with me.
Yes.
And the tone of certain things does not resonate.
Bungie thinks there's nothing cooler in the world than one alien race that uses other alien races as slaves.
Yes.
If one alien race can form, a coalition of slaves, it is just literally the coolest thing that guy has ever thought of or ever will think of. And it needs to be in every one of their properties until the end of time.
Yes.
It's like Chris Claremont with mind control. Like, it's somewhere at some point, someone's spanking it to this. It just shows up so often.
Claremont's thing a fetish and not me.
it's not great. It's amulets. Just real weird, you know. It's a mind control amulets Claremont's. But it's not that cool of an idea to me. You know, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it's just like, yeah, that's okay.
It's a starting point.
What else? You know? What next? The AI stuff that they do in this is way more interesting.
Yes.
But it kind of suffers a little bit by the fact that we've just been in the water of AIs gaining sentient stories for as long as I've been alive.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
You know, so the primary thing that is kind of talking with you is Durandal. You're at the command of this, you know, AI. Like, you know, it was one of several AIs that ran the Marathon space station, but all of them mm-hmm. went rampant. Kind of the idea is that not only is it sentient and self-aware, but is no longer obedient to humanity. It wishes wishes to transcend. And Durandal will give you all of your objectives. You end up working for a couple of other things, and will provide context for what's happening. Not just through text, but also through like images, which are cool, and maps that mm-hmm. I wish were a little bit more helpful. Like broadly, yeah. I wish the tactical information was more direct. Like just like here's like what you're expected to do, and here's how I do that. Segregate that, and then have the story stuff below it. Don't mix it all together and like half state one in service of fully stating the other, I guess.
Yeah, what I want is what they do in StarCraft, basically.
Yeah.
Where like you get the you know, Minsk mm-hmm. tells you his thing, and you get the voice of Minsk, and then there's a bullet pointed list of what you have to do.
Yeah.
You know,
bullet pointed list. Give me those. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Import this game into a Google Doc for me, please.
Yep.
there's a lot of that obfuscation comes from giving voice to Durandal, and that is the thing, even in terms of AIs, that I think is neat.
Mm-hmm.
About this is that this AI is not just good or evil or like alien. Mm-hmm. Like it just has a lot of character. Like it has a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is arrogant, but in a way that like feels kind of fun. Like I end up really liking the character of Durandal.
He's very ostentatious in a way that is actually pretty good. Like he's not quite Am, but like he's headed in that direction.
Yes. And I like the way that they differentiate different, you know, things they'll talk to you through these terminals through like font and mm-hmm. color of text and kind of, you know, format and stuff. That's really clever.
Yeah.
You know, it is very separate. Like there is almost no integration.
Right.
I feel between the play and the story of this. Like, again, it just, you know, and it's a limitation of the graphics and the sense mm-hmm. of place and that lack of immersive simness. Like I have to go set off a bomb or disable a security sender. It's just going to be a panel in a hallway.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like the text is really describing what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
a lot of the time, but the text on its own does sound cool.
Yes.
It also details a huge space battle that I wanted to be part of.
Yep.
Several times. I'm like, man, that sounds cool.
It's like, oh, we have all, you know, 10% of the four fleet coming in, and we've got, you know, these three cruisers on our side. Like, good. Yeah. Let me see it, please. I would like
that would be cool. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I have to go hit that panel?
Oh, okay.
Oh, but after I do that, I have to kill all the guys on the...
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, no, sure. Okay. Each of us serves our part. Okay.
Thanks for me, fam. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hearing about the conflicts between the different AIs, very cool. Like, kind of seeing and, like, getting glimpses of what Durandal is planning and what he decides to communicate with you and not communicate with you is very cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm along for the ride a little bit with the alien stuff, but you do spend a lot of time learning about these alien races and the dynamics between them, specifically the four, which are this conquest, you know, conquering slaver race. They're their primary antagonist, mm-hmm. the Safit, which is like this collection of tribes that is oppressed by the four. Like we are on the Safit homeworld of mm-hmm. Lahuan.
Yep.
And we're trying to like go through and like use a Safit uprising that we never see in order to fight these overconfident four.
How many different ways can a man pronounce an apostrophe? You will find out in this podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I mean, again, Bungie's thing, mm-hmm. you know, humanity against these conflicts of alien races that have taken each other over. Jason Jones, the lead developer of this, loves his world bibles, mm-hmm. and the development of every game that he has begins with him locking himself away and coming up with reams and reams of background text about this stuff. And it is, you know, there's a quality you can get where like it's like how something can be set in the Forgotten Realms. And it's actually like a good example of this because it ties into stuff we've done. I always feel like games set in the Forgotten Realms feel a little bit better than the Dragon Age games because they have the suggestion of a gigantic world around them. You know, there's like a billion books mm-hmm. about it. So like I'm not just learning all of this stuff. You don't end up with things quite, you know, such a straight putt.
Yeah.
It, you know, has a lived in feel, and that's what they're creating with this. Mm-hmm. By creating these reams and reams of background text that you're only going to see glimpses of, that can set stories on that stage that you get to feel to be a small part of. That is cool. That is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. I remember, like, this is back in the day, like in high school or whatever. I remember, like, talking, you know, cause my whole group, you know, played Halo a lot, and mostly the multiplayer. And like, I'd bounced off the single player because, I mean, like for a lot of the same reasons as this, actually, like the levels are pretty aimless, you know, mm-hmm. et cetera. Like eventually you just get to a lot of, you know, cut and paste mazes, maze kind of things, especially in the first one. But I was talking with him and he had described this like, basically described Jason Jones as like this mystic or this oracle who would go away and, you know, come back with this inspiration. And like he was gushing about it as if that in and of itself was enough. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't seem to show up though, does it?
yeah it, like, it's weird the way it kind of influence. Now I can kind of see how it influences things.
Yeah,
but it doesn't. Like, I want him to write a source book.
Yes.
You know, instead of trying to do an FPS where you just kind of learn little bits of this. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand why that feels cool, but the FPS isn't good enough and the bits were only kind of sometimes good enough.
Right.
To me.
Yes. But yeah, the writing here can be good. We talked about it being funny. I love the garbled text of the translated Safit and Four communications mm-hmm. that you get, specifically where the translator cuts in with what the... like, okay, this is our best guess at what this word means, but here are like the alternate connotations. So like, as you're reading it, you're drawing a conclusion you're drawing like a compromise between those things. Like, how do I combine these concepts in a way that gets at what the original meaning of this ought to be? It's a little bit, Mark Z. Danielewski, the, author of House of Leaves, which, you know, book that I talk about, book that a lot of people talk about too much, worked on a series of like sci-fi fantasy novels called The Familiar. And each character kind of has their own little textual gimmick in it. One of them is similar to this, where it is kind of done in basically like regular expressions, in computer text, where you get, you know, things formatted to imply this ambiguity. It's a way that would be real cool if you're into that kind of dorky stuff with text.
Yeah. I have no problem with it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, the text in this game is usually pretty good answer reprieve from like doing the non-text things.
Yes.
Of it. Another big thing about this was the multiplayer. Mm-hmm. You know, this was, if you were a Mac kid, this is how you did multiplayer.
Yep.
You know, if you wanted to have your Doom, you had to play it on Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, there were six multiplayer LAN modes for this, King of the Hill, Kill the Man with the Ball, etc., kind of things like that. These would go on to influence Halo quite a bit.
Yes. I'm happy that they called it Kill the Man with the Ball, because it seems like every other name for that game is a horrible slur.
Yeah. No, there's not.
There's not a good way to say that. It's,
there's not that many
weird
things that rhyme with smear. It's it's unfortunate. It's also, you know, these levels as well as the main levels. I wanted to just briefly talk about the names of the levels.
Yeah.
Real, like, what energy is this? Is this like,
it feels liquid fratty.
Fratty, but also something that would be written on a monitor in like a liquid television short or something. You know, like fratty, like sassy. And this all ties into the sound stuff, which is worth talking about as well. They got rid of the music in this game to just have, you know, sound effects other than the title theme, which is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I had a glitch happen once where the title theme didn't stop playing.
Oh, yay.
And that entire session was just a marathon. It's so funny. Yeah. It was just like killing gugs in a bad club. You know?
Marathon.
Marathon. Die gug die.
But like the level names, it feels like they go back and forth between being a little bit I hate this word, but I'll use it, a little bit pretentious, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, like this is all done in like Latin, but then you get ones that are like, look out for unattended, look out for abandoned rental trucks, which is just an irreverent reference to the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah. kill your television.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's very like, MTV of the time, it feels like.
Yes.
Very mid-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the development of the game, I couldn't find an awful lot of like remarkable details about this. Like the engine was already done. They made a couple of enhancements. You know, the levels were able to be larger, specifically to address the complaint that everything was really cramped and corridory. So we get these outdoor levels. You know, you're outdoors when you hear loon.wave.
And this was a big reaction out of the first one. Most of the enhancements, though, were under the hood. They weren't things that the player would really see. You talked about the music. The enemies have distinctive kind of sound effects and barks. And then there are bobs born on board. These people who were born there who will fight alongside you. And they have little dialogue barks that are real. Like this feels like this is proto grunt material. This is them trying to throw in a little comedy.
Yeah,
you know, like again, Bungie just has these obsessions, like little disposable guys.
Yeah,
well, it's just the funniest fucking thing in the world to them.
It's even pretty similar. Like, Halo 2 specifically, like had a lot of like your fellow guys, like just regular Marines that you that you fight alongside. Many of which were just voiced by David Cross because he was a big fan of the original Halo. So like you have just David Cross fighting alongside you.
That's weird.
Yeah. Just like saying things, you know, it doesn't matter if he dies, he keeps coming back saying things like, can you turn down the suck, please? As Master Chief, so you can turn down the suck.
Yeah, well, Master Chief only turns up the suck on Cortana, which we all know. Like,
this, it's right in there. It's on the codpiece.
Yeah. So I don't know about that. Like, there's a kind of like the scream.
That's what my grandma would say. Ooh, I don't know about that.
I'm thinking about David Cross just like shouting, you know, goofy one-liners at you while you're playing. Like, is there? There are very few game series, I think, that like, to me, inelegantly, but I know some people really dig it, straddle this line between like high art literary pretension and whatever you would call like naming a level Eat It Vid Boy.
It's something that we praise in other contexts where it is done elegantly, you know.
I just don't think it works here.
Yeah, it's
Because you know, having David Cross like shout those things, like you're supposed to care about Master Chief, right? I got that. You know, I only played ODST, but I got the impression that like Master Chief is not to be fucked with.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like people respect and like that character, and you're supposed to feel like a weird kind of sense of pride and like drama and kind of pathos to those stories. But then you also just have these characters like tossing Wilhelm screams and like, you know, David Cross sound bites, and then little goofy triangle grunts is going, who forgot the ammo? It's so weird. Like, what a weird fucking combination.
Yeah. Tone, I think, is important, necessary.
All over the place.
Tone can go all over the place. You want to be confident that whoever's hand is on the rudder knows what they're doing, and it does not come across that way here.
Yeah, I just this combination of tone, this is like it, you know, it like somebody tried to make a new peanut butter and pickles. Like it's like when my friend Austin was like, chocolate cottage cheese should work. You know, chocolate milk works. Like, why doesn't Hershey's syrup and cottage cheese work? And then just let's go get mom. You know, like it didn't work. And that's what this feels like to me.
Yeah. Were you doing the Tom Collins mix and cloves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Let's go get mom. The way they developed this was specifically done to make make it easy for modders to make new content.
That's cool as shit. I'm really like that. That is a good thing for a studio to do.
Yeah, I love that. Let people play with the toy.
Yeah. Just the engine called out to external files, and it was easy to author those external files. So they can be brought in a transparent way. This was possible in other places, other games, but here it was kind of like made for that. And that led to this really robust modding scene. Some mods are full conversions that have been in development for decades. Like it's a really, you know, dedicated scene, as these tend to be.
Yeah. And this is all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So you get like survival horror games, you get sequels that are in canon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all kinds of experimental games that use procedural generation. Neat.
Yes.
Marathon 2, along with the entire trilogy, is released as open source freeware. That happened in 2005, excuse me. And you can run Marathon 2 specifically in an engine called Aleph 1, which is a little bit like Z-Doom. This is how I'd recommend it. This is how I did it. Mm-hmm. Unless not doing that answers every single problem I have with the game, which I kind of would be surprised.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's easy to get a hold of, and kudos to them for just releasing the trilogy for free. Mm-hmm. Like, we have Halo money. We don't need to,
Let's put this out there. I mean, like, that's also part of this ethos. That is not just them, like, opening up to modders from the beginning. Like, there are people who got hired at Bungie specifically because of, like, the interpretation that they did on the story and, like, fan site kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a real embrace your fans and the work they do kind of thing, which, again, pretty cool. Bungie did an official re-release of Marathon 2 for Xbox Live Arcade in 2007. This is cool, so you can just go and pay $6 and get this. They wanted to do the entire trilogy this way, but Microsoft would not let them at the time.
You can, however, play the entire trilogy on iOS
if you want to.
Which includes free-to-play skins. If you want to have a targeting reticle, you have to pay for it, and then you can pay for Master Chief mode to have invincibility and kind of God mode.
I don't like that
through the iOS version. Nope, nobody likes it. It's not very well thought of.
Yeah.
The following game in the series after Marathon 2 is Marathon Infinity. That came out in 1996. It's not a direct sequel. It's an alternate timeline. So the events of Marathon 2 creates this alternate timeline. And that game is supposed to be difficult, but good. A lot of people say it's the best one in the series.
Yeah. Reading about the story and reading about, like, the levels and stuff you do, it does sound wild. It does sound wild and cool. I do not know that I'm going to do much more than just read about it, though.
I know that I won't.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it. I'm going to take it long. You know, at some point I'm going to play, Myth, the other big Bungie series. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to feel comfortable being like, no Bungie for me.
Yeah.
I just don't like this developer. I don't like what they do. Not for me.
So there was, speaking of Myth, there was a Marathon 3 in development for 2 months or so before Bungie shifted over to making Myth the Fallen Lords. Kind of the thing that they said was an explanation for that was like, yeah, Quake is really popular. We don't want to get into a place where we are competing directly with them with our own sci-fi shooter kind of thing.
So this game reviewed pretty well, and it is considered a huge cult following, considered to be hugely influential, really well thought of.
Yes.
Just in terms of FPSs at the time, but then also because of the Mac curve. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people, like, this did come out in Windows 95, but the predecessor did not. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to play a shooter on Mac, this was your version of it.
Yes.
So a lot of kids who grew up with Macs, like, this is very important to them. I know, like, Jeremy Parrish brings up the Marathon games quite a bit.
Our buddy Riff talks about Marathon glowingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's worth noting too, just because I don't know where else to put it. Have you seen the box for this thing?
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's incredible.
God, like, I miss that era. Badass. Like, it's so fucking wasteful, but I miss that era of PC boxes. Like, I want
a bespoke cardboard, please.
God, I was thinking about, did you ever buy one of those, like, it was in like the mid to late 90s, just a collection of LucasArts games?
Archives.
Yeah, it was like, it was in the box that had the transparent cutaway windows in the front of it, and all the games were on like little slightly, it was like one big tilted plastic sheet where everything was kind of arranged to look like it was, all the discs were flying at you in space.
Yes,
love those fucking things. That's how I got my my TIE Fighter and X-Wing.
Well, it was the thing too. It was really interesting because the, I always wanted the LucasArts archives, and in the early days of eBay, I was trying to get it, but I was trying to find the adventure game one.
Yes.
Which was impossible to find, but the Star Wars one was not. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, through eBay in like early, foibles in eBay. And if people don't remember early eBay, it was a much more like Wild West.
Yeah.
I accidentally bought 2 copies of the Star Wars one.
Oh, no.
Trying to get the adventure game one.
Yeah.
Back in the day, because pictures included were, somebody who could have good feedback but not do good descriptions, and I was an idiot. As well. So I ended up with several copies of those that ended up at some point in a thrift store.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm down with the TIE Fighter games and stuff, and Jedi Forces. Like, I played those, but I didn't need multiple copies of them.
Yeah.
I would share with Kayla.
But I want to look at a box like this one and think, oh God, people, like store clerks agonized over how to stock this thing. Mm-hmm. I want it to be as difficult to stock as possible, please.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, that's their problem, not mine. Like, it's, you know, if this is what it takes for me to get a cool box, you know?
Oh man. Love it.
So it's you know, the platform, this Mac thing, and this, for the series more.
Yeah.
I kind of limited the scope. So this did not sell super well. It sold less than 200,000 units. Mm-hmm. But that was Bungie before Halo came out and became a huge hit for some reason.
Bungie was because it was a killer app for a major platform that was put out. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, just prior to Halo, Bungie was a little bit more of a boutique kind of experience.
And that's gonna be it for this first half of the episode. We appreciate you listening. If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode and all of our premium episodes, you can join us at Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, $5 a month gives you this one and the rest. And otherwise, we will see you in a week for our Dispatch episode for November.
It is too late as of right now, I believe, to write in, but if you have thoughts about December's games, which are Dragon Age 2, including the expansions, and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, go to duckfeed.tv/contact.
Mm-hmm.
And write in by December the 15th. Also, go to orb.show and listen to our show about the Venture Brothers.
That is we'd really appreciate it. That show is fun and good, and we think you'd like it.
I think that's everything.
That is everything. See you next week.
Bye.